This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Mavericks, Book 6 of Expeditionary Force, written by Craig Allinson, performed by R.C. Bray. Chapter 1. I had to let Skippy's shocking last statement roll around in my brain for a moment before I could speak. Perkins and her team are not on Paradise? Nope, Skippy clarified unhelpfully. Crap. Damn it, that pilot, Irene, he corrected me. Irene, yeah. She didn't, like, take a wrong turn or something. No, Joe. Well, I assume they didn't win a fabulous vacation cruise, so how the hell... Joe, while playing 20 questions with you would be immensely entertaining for me, we should jump away from here first. Oh, yeah. Desai. I checked the list on the command chair's armrest. Wherever we had to go to rescue Perkins, we first had to stop by a gas giant planet to fill the Dutchman's depleted fuel tanks. Jump option Alpha. Aye, aye, Captain, Desai replied and pressed a button. The only change on the main bridge display was the faint dot of the local star had disappeared because we were now in interstellar space. If you were ever looking for nowhere, we were smack in the middle of it. Okay, Skippy. I took a deep breath and watched Hans Chotek silently fuming at me. You better just tell us where Perkins is now and what kind of trouble she's gotten into this time. We have plenty of time for that later, Joe. I downloaded all the info to your tablets and laptops. You can read the whole story in detail anytime you like. Right now, we need to prepare for the refueling operation. I suggest... sure. I cut off the beer can before he could get into geeky technical details of the risky art to extract fuel. How about you give us the elevator version of the story? Elevator version? Skippy asked, puzzled. Then he got excited. Oh, you mean like elevator music? I suppose I could put the story into a musical format, like an epic opera. In fact, that is a great idea. No, that is a terrible idea. I waved my hands while seeing panicked faces in the CIC. No one wanted to give Skippy an excuse to sing. I meant like an elevator pitch, you know? I had to read that concept in one of the U.S. Army PowerPoint slides I was supposed to study for officer training. Give us the 30-second version of the story. Oh. The beer can's hopes were crushed. Ooh, he sighed. All right. Fine, he said with disgust, to make clear it was anything but fine to him. To make a long story short, Perkins is... The lights went out. All the lights, even the independently powered emergency lights. My stomach did flip-flops as the artificial gravity cut out completely, and it wasn't the typical slow power down of the gravity generators. This was someone flipping a switch from on to off. So startling and sudden was the loss of power that instead of frightened cries of alarm from the crew, there was a brief moment of pure silence. Pure silence, like no sound, no gentle hissing of air through the vents, no beeping from control panels. That was odd. What I picked up on immediately, what made my hair stand on end, was the loss of the faint rumbling sound of the reactor. Our new second-hand reactor that Skippy dug out of the junkyard in the Roach Motel had a different and lower-pitched sound than the Dutchman's original reactors, and the new reactor had an intermittent vibration that had scared the hell out of me and kept me awake at night until I got used to it. Now I was holding my breath, hoping that scary vibration would be felt through my boots on the deck. Nothing. What scared me the most, made my insides freeze into a solid lump, was the absolute silence from Skippy. The silence was broken by everyone talking at once, although because the Merry Band of Pirates are highly disciplined, badass special operations troops, no one panicked. "Everyone quiet, please," I asked in what was supposed to be a calm voice that came out as a broken squeak. "Skippy. Skippy, are you there?" Oh, thank God. His beer can lit up with a soft blue glow bright enough to illuminate the bridge, combat information center, and the passageway outside. I'm here, Joe. Sorry about not responding immediately. I was super-duper ultra-busy. Other lights began to show as people pulled out their Z-phones and activated the flashlight feature. Everything is okay with you, right? You didn't go on holiday again? Huh? Nope, no, I'm fine. I was just super extra awesomely busy trying to determine why all the power cut out. The emergency power should have come on. The The red backup lighting snapped on as he spoke. Like I said, emergency power is restored. Temporarily. Just local independent systems are active. Even the backup power is offline. Whew! Reactor containment was iffy there for a moment. Kind of skating on the edge of disaster. I got it now. Damn, that was too close. What was too close? What went wrong? I'm still investigating that, Joe. Lots of numbers to crunch. I suggest you get the crew preparing to get into spacesuits, escape pods, dropships, anything with an independent source of power. Although, damn it, the dropships are now powering down one by one. And the escape pods. Crap! Everything is shutting down. Skippy, we need some answers pronto. Can you... Joe, I am extremely busy right now. Like, with the superconducting magnets of the reactor containment system failing, I am the only thing preventing hot plasma from exploding and destroying the ship. Talk to you later. He ended the conversation abruptly. And not knowing what had gone wrong was intensely frustrating, but there wasn't anything I could do about it until Skippy analyzed the problem. If he couldn't contain the radioactive plasma in the main reactor, we would not have any problems to analyze, so I left him alone to do whatever he was doing. I jammed a thumb down on the button to open the Dutchman's 1MC intercom system, which fortunately broadcast to people's Z-phones through Skippy. All hands, this is the captain. We have suffered... What? I paused like an idiot. An apparent engineering casualty. I used the most vague term I could think of. At least the crew would be assured the problem was not caused by enemy action. Unless... Crap, it was caused by some kind of enemy action. Skippy had not ruled that out. Until main power is restored, please... I stuttered to a halt again. Please what, abandon ship? That wasn't the answer, especially with the dropships falling offline. Get access to spacesuits and secure extra power packs, as many as you can get. While the suits were in storage, they were plugged into main power to keep their internal power cells topped off and ready for immediate use. Main power was dead, and dropships were powering down. Dropships in dock and bays were plugged into umbilical power cables. Even the Ready Bird we kept on Zulu alert. If whatever caused the problem with main power also traveled up the umbilical cables, then our spacesuits might be affected also. Report into the CIC when you have a functioning suit available. You do not need to put the suit on or use supplemental oxygen at this time, I added to avoid people using up their suit's breathable air supply. The internal volume of the Dutchman's hull contained enough air for almost a full day, though the air in populated compartments was going to get warm and stale quickly. I needed to consider dispersing people out of the CIC and galley and into cargo holds, any place with a large volume of air. Maybe if we kept all the internal doors open, that might slow the process of carbon dioxide building up in isolated areas of the ship. Maybe instead of guessing, I should ask someone who knows actual sciencey stuff. Colonel, Gunnery Sergeant Adams called out while floating beside my chair, holding a spacesuit she had pulled from a locker we installed in the CIC. Her face was lit up by the Z-phone she was holding between two fingers, and because I am a moron, the first thought that flashed across my brain was something like, wow, she has really beautiful skin, followed by me noticing for the first time how thick her eyelashes were. In my defense, she was floating right in front of my face, and the Z-phone was glowing from close to her right ear, so my eyes concentrated on what I could see in the overall dim lighting. Either that or I am just a complete idiot. Let's go with the first explanation. What? I shook my head to bring my brain back into focus. This suit is dead. She pointed to the status display on the spacesuit's left wrist. The display was blank. Not even the usual faint blue standby indicator was glowing. Oh, crap. Wait. I had a thought as my brain kicked into gear. Disconnect the power cell and swap in one of the spare power cells, one that wasn't plugged in for charging. We had more power cells than charging stations aboard the ship, so we had a schedule for rotating power cells to keep all of them fully charged. That is a task the crew performed, even though Skippy had disdainfully insisted his bots could handle the job more efficiently. Efficiency is not the point, I had told him. The crew needed to take responsibility for assuring the readiness of critical equipment, if we could handle the job without screwing something up. That is why we maintained our personal weapons as best we could, and why we participated in regular maintenance chores for the combots, dropships, and any other piece of equipment we could touch without risk of us blowing up the ship. Even if all pilots could do was hold tools for the bots working on dropships, The pilots would see what the bots were doing and have at least some feeling of control over how their ships were maintained. One of the CIC crew heard me, reached into the locker for a spare power cell, and gently tossed it toward Adams. In the zero-G, the power cell floated off course, so I had to snatch it out of the air and hand it to Adams, taking the suit's dead power cell from her. Power cells were designed to be swapped by someone wearing a suit, so ironically it was more awkward to take one out and snap in a new one from outside the suit. The suit kept moving around until I saw the frustrated look on her face turning into a flash of anger. With her floating, she couldn't get any leverage on the handle to swing the power cell into place, so I clamped the suit's legs between my thighs and hugged the suit's torso to my chest to hold it steady for her. She acknowledged my action with a silent nod, and her grimace turned to a smile as I heard the click of the power cell's cover snapping into place. Instantly, the wrist display lit up. Yes. Her face glowed, and not just from the Z-phone. How did you know, sir? She looked at me with a combination of awe and suspicion. Well, I didn't know. I was guessing, I admitted. When I heard the dropships were powering down, I wondered if whatever the fault is travels along the umbilical cables. And suits in storage are plugged into charging stations, she flashed a wry smile. Good thinking, sir. That's why you get the big bucks. I got lucky. Sims, I called through the glass separating the bridge from the CIC. Notify the crew not to trust anything that was plugged in and to replace their suit power cells with cells that were in storage. Yes, Colonel, Sims acknowledged and spoke into a Z-phone. Although the ship's comm system was down, Skippy could relay Z-phone signals throughout the ship until the Z-phone power cells died. I wonder, Adams frowned, holding the dead power cell. I'd like to try connecting this dead one to a power cell that is active. Okay, I asked slowly. Why? I'd like to know whether this power cell is really dead, or if it got drained by running the charging system backwards or something, she explained. If it accepts a charge, it only got drained and the power cell itself is okay. A good idea. Do that. Sims waved for my attention. All stations acknowledge, Colonel. We have confirmation that swapping power cells solves the suit problem, she added to confirm our success was not a fluke. Lieutenant Williams wants to try swapping power cells in a combat. Tell him permission granted, but let's hold experiments to a minimum for now. We don't want to risk our supply of good power cells. Adams? No joy, sir. She shook her head slowly. Damn it. Now the good power cell I connected to the dead one is also offline. Whatever the problem is, it must get transmitted through hard connections. I snapped my fingers. My tablet is in my office sitting on a charging mat, I stated, though it occurred to me that with the loss of artificial gravity, the tablet might now be floating out in the passageway. Check if my tablet is dead, Gunny. Aye, aye, sir, Adams said as she propelled herself out the door. Because my tiny office was just around a corner, she returned in seconds, wiping her face. Why was her face wet? And what was the dark stain on her uniform? Oh, yeah. Sorry about the coffee, Sergeant. I remembered right then that I had left a half cup of coffee on my desk. That liquid must have dispersed into the air when the gravity cut off. Eh, that was my fault. I had been thinking like my office was on firm ground somewhere rather than on a ship. Would a Marine make such a boneheaded mistake? Maybe not. Most Marines I knew tended to think in terms of being based aboard a ship. Any luck? No, she replied while gently pushing my tablet to me. I caught it and verified the thing was indeed totally dead. Crap. Damn it, I've had this thing since before Columbus Day. Same tablet? She asked in surprise. That's old for a tablet. It runs Skippy software, so it never needs updating, I said defensively. And I never had to think about a problem with it until now. Crap. I bought that tablet before my old battalion got shipped out to Nigeria. I used it there sometimes to video chat with my folks back home, although the Wi-Fi connection out in the bush there had mostly been on the tin cans and string level. I was proud when I bought that tablet, and it had been to the jungle and the stars and back with me. Was it now only a paperweight? Oh, hell, without artificial gravity, it wasn't even any kind of weight. Major Sims warned people not to trust anything connected to ship's power, whether it's a hard connection or not. Sims passed the word, and within a minute she reported that everyone aboard the ship had a spacesuit ready for use. Everyone except me, because I had been sitting uselessly strapped into the command chair. Here you go, sir. Adams came to my rescue, pulling a spacesuit over to me and tying it to the back of the chair. It's ready to go. She pointed to the blue glowing standby indicator. There are 3 spare good power cells attached to the waist belt. Thank you, Gunny. I caught the eye roll from her when I used the term Gunny for her new rank. Adams didn't think her field promotion was legit, especially when the promotion was granted by a sergeant masquerading as a colonel. I agreed with her about that second part, but she deserved to be a gunnery sergeant. If she was serving with the Marine Corps on Earth, she almost certainly would have been promoted to an E-7 pay grade by now. So far, I had not insisted that Adams wear the patch with a second rocker to indicate her new status, but the ship's crew log had her listed as gunnery sergeant, and I had heard an increasing number of people calling her Gunny whether she liked it or not. Should we? Hey, Joe! Skippy's avatar popped to life in midair between bridge and CIC. Skippy, are the reactors good? I've vented the plasma from the main reactor. There's some minor damage to the hull from the emergency venting. Nothing to worry about. Joe, we are in big effing trouble. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Main and backup reactors are offline and I can't restart them because there is no power to the superconducting containment system. Almost every power generation or power storage system aboard the ship is dead. Anything that was connected to the ship at the time of the incident. Even the jump drive capacitors are completely drained and in cold shutdown. Totally dead. Yeah, we found that ourselves. Power cells that weren't plugged in. Those backup power cells won't last forever and they will start going dead soon as the problem migrates into power storage devices that don't have a hard connection. Skippy, what the hell is going on? If one of our ancient second-hand reactors shut down, I could understand that because we picked them up from a junkyard. But the problem was not confined only to equipment we found in the junkyard. Joe, have you ever bought a used car, and the dealership supposedly cleaned the thing, but you find the previous owner's stuff under a seat? And my cousin bought a truck, and a couple months later he found panties under the passenger seat. 2 pairs. One pair I can understand, but damn. 2? That guy must have gotten luck. I caught Adams giving me a look. Must have, neglected to check under the seats before he sold that truck, I finished, my face growing beet red. That was a heartwarming and insightful story, Joe. Really super helpful, Skippy mocked me. My point was, when you get something pre-owned, sometimes you get more than you bargained for. Huh. Like what? We haven't bought any... Oh, crap. The junkyard? We brought something back from the Roach Motel? I guessed. Unfortunately, yes, Joe. It now appears the Guardians tagged wreckage in the junkyard with tracers to monitor the status of ships they had broken up. Tracers? Like a GPS tag? Why didn't you know about these tags? And how could something like that shut down? No, dum-dum, not like a GPS tag. The devices... Well, actually, they are not devices at all because they have no physical presence. They are... He huffed with ultimate disgust. How do I explain this to a monkey? To you? It's an energy virus. Like a virus, but it affects systems which generate and store energy, rather than affecting matter like a living cell. Okay. I ponder that concept. Is it anything like the nanovirus the Theranin used to take control of Kristang ships? No, it's nothing crude like that. The Theranin technology, which they stole and barely understand, by the way, is still based on manipulating matter. This virus is energy, Joe. Pure energy. So it's like a computer virus, I guessed. Close enough. Except without a computer to infect or any sort of software code. Joe, this virus feeds on and attacks patterns of energy. It changes their pattern? Again, close enough. Let me give you an example. Okay. The power cell in that spacesuit was fully charged, and all that energy did not get drained in an instant, he declared with a snap of his avatar's fingers. The finger snapping made a sound which I think was something new. I don't remember Skippy doing that before. The energy is still in that power cell, but it is now locked away in a pattern that can't be accessed. It's like the energy is tangled up in knots and can't flow out the power connections. Ugh! He sighed in his best drama queen fashion, shrugging his shoulders and throwing up his hands. Damn! I am getting dumber just trying to explain this to you. Uh-huh. Can you untangle the knots, or whatever? No. Damn it. Fine, what do we have for a backup energy source? Well, Joe, I was going to switch from the reactors to the beryllium sphere, but it's cracked. His voice dripped with sarcasm. Were you not listening to me at all? We can't generate or store energy at all, dum-dum. Give me some good news, Skippy. Come on. Throw me a bone, will you? The good news is if I can purge the system of the energy virus, the power cells should recharge without any lasting effects, I think. I've never encountered an energy virus, so all I have to go on is theory. Truthfully, I'm kind of making shit up as I go. Okay. I ran a hand through my hair and took a deep breath while I processed the latest disaster that had struck the merry band of pirates. You got any ideas how to purge this energy virus from the ship? Yep, Skippy replied with bubbly good cheer. And you'll like this one because it is easy peasy. Would you care to enlighten me, O Great One? It's simple, Joe, and there is only one way to do it. I need to reboot the ship. Turn the ship off, drain all power completely, then I'll restart it using my own internal power. Hopefully. I'm not making any promises. Turn the ship off. I could not imagine the entire length of the Flying Dutchman, even our much rebuilt Frankenship, going dark. Like, off. For how long? My best guess is 86 hours. Could be a bit longer. 86? Holy crap, Skippy. We're supposed to live in spacesuits that whole time? What? No, dum-dum. Didn't you listen? He scoffed. I said turn off the ship. That means everything, anything that generates, uses, or stores power. That includes spacesuits and dropships, in case you were hoping to take shelter in those until it is safe to come back aboard the Dutchman. How the hell are we going to survive for 86 freaking... It could be longer, he warned me. 86 or more hours in deep space with zero power. No lights, no oxygen recycling, no heat. I knew that heat was not the worst problem, not even in the utter frozen wastes of interstellar space. The ship was surrounded by hard vacuum, basically a thermos, the best insulator. There wasn't anything touching the ship's hull to pull heat away, so the only way we would lose heat was through photons or infrared light slowly radiating away from the ship, and that would take a while. The crew could wear cold weather gear, then spacesuits to retain body heat, so cold was not an immediate problem. Joe, the problem is a bit more complicated than that. Of course it is, I threw up my hands. What complication? Once I have turned off all shipboard systems and drained all power, there will be one source aboard the ship still generating electrical power. Our Z-phones, I guessed. Oh, hell. We can live without, not phones, Joe. Humans! The human nervous system generates and uses electricity. If all other systems are drained of power, the energy virus will migrate into your bodies and attack the energy patterns there. Oh, crap. Uh-huh. Oh, crap, indeed. The crew needs to be away from the ship when I begin turning the power off, so the energy virus won't have access to you, because that would be fatal. Away from the ship in spacesuits that don't have any power? Because spacesuits had a lot of surface area compared to our thermal mass, heat would radiate away quicker than from the ship. I'm not bragging about knowing that fact, Dr. Friedlander told me. Heat wasn't the most immediate problem, because without power, the suits could not circulate or recycle oxygen. Unfortunately, I do not see any other way to purge the energy virus from the ship without it using the crew as hosts, so... You need to get away. And we're running out of time, so we need to get started. Skippy, you certainly know people can't survive 86 hours, not even 86 minutes, in an unpowered suit. Yet, your idea is to get us away from the ship, so you must have a plan. Please tell me you have a plan.
Nope,
he said with way more cheerfulness than was appropriate. Not a single clue! I know how to purge the energy virus from all of our systems. What I do not know is how the crew will survive without any source of power long enough for me to absolutely drain all power and erase the virus. Crap. Explain the problem to me in simple terms, please. I have already started draining power from every system we have, but it's a race against time because the virus is attempting to use the locked-up power to destroy the ship. That means we can't delay implementing whatever plan you dream up. The crew will need to be away from energy storage sources like the ship and dropships long enough for me to purge the virus. That is 86 hours for the Flying Dutchman, and about 32 hours for dropships. All right. My mind was already racing through ideas. We leave the ship in spacesuits that have dead power cells. And how about we float away from the ship to meet up with power cells we will send ahead of us? Not happening, Joe. You have to leave the ship, but you can't take any sort of stored energy with you. That includes electrical, thermal, and chemical energy. Shit, we can't take anything with us? We are too far away from a star to use solar power panels. Correct. And this is freaking impossible. Well, to me it is impossible, but I have learned from painful experience that for all my incredible awesomeness, I am not good at dreaming up creative solutions to impossible problems. Thus, I have outsourced that little task to you. Outsourced? Sure, Joe. His avatar waved a hand dismissively toward me. Make it happen. Oh, and hurry, please. We don't have a lot of time. All right, I'll talk to Dr. Friedlander. I am not great at physics, but there is one thing I do know. What's that? We're gonna have to science the shit out of this. Chapter 2. Our horribly complicated and idiotic plan, and yes, I am using ironic quotes around the word plan, started by draining power from the dropships. All of our dropships. Every single one. Then, when every system aboard those dropships was almost completely dead, Skippy overpressurized the docking bays with nitrogen, released the docking clamps, and blew the outer doors open one at a time. The inert dropships got sucked out into space, tumbling out of control away from the Flying Dutchman. Why, you might ask, were we not using the dropships as shelters while we had to be away from the ship? Because the power cells of the dropships took a long time to really, truly, completely drain, and by the time the power cells were totally dead and truly purged of the energy virus, any humans inside would have frozen solid before the energy virus was safely gone. Also, as the dropship power cells were draining, the energy virus would be looking for a new host. So it would be very bad for humans to be aboard a dropship at that time. Humans could not be aboard dropships, and we could not be aboard the ship. For at least 86 hours, we needed to be away from the ship, because the much larger power cells and capacitors of the ship took a very long time to drain completely. That left spacesuits for humans to survive in, while Skippy purged the energy virus from the ship and dropships. Easy, right? We get into spacesuits, float away from the Flying Dutchman, and Skippy recovers us after the ship is rebooted. No, not so easy. First, the power cells of the spacesuits also had to be fully drained before we got into them. Drained like completely super-duper dead. The power cells of our Krystang-powered armor suits were comparatively small, so Skippy was able to purge them within a couple hours before we got into the suits aboard the Dutchman, eliminating the risk of the dying energy virus trying to infect a person inside the suit. How were we supposed to survive in spacesuits that had no power at all? That was where our way too risky plan started to get really complicated. After the dropships were a safe distance away from the ship, we all got into suits, wearing portable breathing masks hooked up to oxygen bottles attached to the suit backpack. The suit helmets weren't designed for users to wear a mask, so it was a tight fit, and my mask kept scratching my chin and the bridge of my nose. Once we had our dead suits buttoned up and verified everyone had oxygen flowing into their masks properly, we tethered ourselves together in groups of 10 people, floating above the floor of a docking bay. Skippy depressurized the bay, opened the outer doors, and I pressed a button on a Z-phone to activate a pre-programmed maneuver, then tossed the Z-phone away because its power cell was still active. A few seconds after I sent the command to the ship's navigation system, the backup thrusters fired, moving the ship sideways. It seemed like we were moving, but with the entire crew floating tethered together, we stayed in one place while the ship slowly backed away from us. The backup thrusters used pressurized gas and were not powerful, which was good, because we didn't want any sudden movements in case something went wrong. Tethered to 9 other people, I tried to relax and not move to prevent us from bouncing off the doorframe on our way out. With 10 people loosely tied together, we inevitably jostled around and began drifting toward the ceiling of the docking bay, but we were still well clear when the ship slid out beneath us and we were floating freely in interstellar space. All I could hear was my own breathing, the hiss of oxygen flowing into my mask, and blood pulsing in my ears. With the suit completely drained of power, I couldn't speak with anyone over the comm system. To communicate, We each had something like a small whiteboard strapped to one forearm and three high-tech fluorescent magic markers that worked reasonably well in space. If we needed to, we could write messages on our whiteboards and hold them up for others to see through the transparent visors of our helmets. In the utter darkness of interstellar space, the only light was coming from a single point on the Dutchman, pointed toward us. Strapped to nine other people, I forced myself to remain calm to conserve oxygen, and watched the Dutchman slowly fading behind me. In interstellar space, the bulk of the ship was a dark void in the dark star field, except for the one light that Skippy kept pointed in our direction. With that light, I could see other groups of people tied together, each group tumbling slowly out of sync with the other groups. There was no point trying to stabilize the tumbling, because even if we could synchronize the actions of 10 people using hand signals, as soon as a group got stable, little motions would get the group tumbling again. For 40 long, silent, lonely, and terrifying minutes, we drifted in empty space. After we had drifted half a kilometer from the ship, or technically after the ship had drifted half a kilometer from us, the pre-programmed instruction fired the ship's backup thrusters hard, using up all the stored gas canisters. We needed to be safely far from the ship when Skippy began draining all power from every energy storage system, and we couldn't wait long, so the ship had to scoot away from us as fast as possible. The only way I knew how much time had passed was by Skippy blinking the spotlight after each 5-minute period had passed. When the spotlight blinked 6 times, I knew we had been floating inside dead spacesuits for 30 minutes, and I was already getting distinctly chilly. Part of me being cold was psychological. The Kristang suits were good at retaining heat, and the hard vacuum of interstellar space was an excellent insulator. Skippy had assured us we would not be in danger of hypothermia for nearly an hour, but at the 30-minute mark, I could feel my toes growing stiff and cold, and I could only move them a little inside the boots. Even 3 pairs of U.S. Army cold weather socks were not helping my toes be happy. Finally, the spotlight blinked 8 times to signal 40 minutes had passed, then shined solidly for 10 seconds, in case any of us were not paying attention. That was the signal we were now a safe distance from the Flying Dutchman, where the energy virus could not project itself across the gap. Probably could not project across the gap, according to Skippy, he was guessing, and the best he could give me was a solid shmaybe about it. His level of confidence didn't matter, because we couldn't wait much longer. I was shivering inside the suit, and our oxygen supply was only going to stretch another 30 minutes. We needed to get started on the next phase of our science team's complicated, impractical plan. How, you may ask, were we supposed to restore power to our suits when we could not take any type of energy storage device out into space with us? I asked Friedlander the same question, and when he explained how our suits were going to power up, I nearly choked. Using the few bots Skippy was able to get working, the beer can had made a super-duper high-tech device that blew my primitive caveman mind when I saw it. A spring. Yes, a tightly wound coil of some flexible composite material attached to an electric motor. Skippy's little helper elf bots had wound the springs for us before the devices were attached to our suits. All we had to do was reach behind to the bottom of our packs and put a gloved finger through a ring to pull out a locking pin. I got it on the first try, without the fumbling around that happened when I practiced the maneuver aboard the ship. With the locking pin spinning away into deep space, I pulled a lever and felt my backpack shake as the coiled spring unwound. The suit stopped shaking, but still there were no comforting status lights showing in my helmet visor. Skippy had warned me the power cells needed to reach a minimum charge before the suit's systems would restart. Hey, Joe. Hey, can you hear me? He made a booming sound like a finger tapping a microphone. Is this thing on? Damn it. Stupid monkey probably broke the spring. Why did I trust... I'm here, Skippy, I replied, speaking slowly because my teeth were chattering from the cold. Joe! Man, it is good to hear your voice. Okay, getting a status message from your suit? Looks like you have within 1% of the expected charge level. Pretty good, huh? I cobbled those springs together out of spare parts. Wasn't sure they would work. You weren't sure they would work? Yet you sent us out into the great beyond anyway? In my defense, I wasn't sure all of them would work. I was confident most of them would. So far, it looked like only one spring has failed, and that still provided 70% of the output I expected. Are all the suits in my group powered up? From my position on the tether, I could only see into one other person's faceplate. Yes, Joe. The person with the bad spring is in Major Desai's group. She is helping that person get powered up manually. Speaking of which... Yeah, I'm on it. While I reached into the sort of fanny pack on the front of my suit, I called out to the other 9 people in my group, talking briefly with each of them to assure myself that they had come through the ordeal without too much trauma. Or that they had come through the first part of our ordeal, because the really traumatic part for me would come later. Next, I checked in with the other group leaders while carefully extracting the handle from my fanny pack and connecting it to the gear on my belt. My grandfather would have described the next part as a cockamamie scheme. He was fond of colorful, old-fashioned expressions like that. The pre-wound spring only provided enough power to get the suits restarted and allow comms and oxygen recycling to be restored. To keep those basic systems running and to get the heater units going, we needed more energy. We did not have extra coiled springs, but fortunately we did have a source of power. Human muscles. After I fitted the handle to the gear, I extended the handle and began slowly pulling it toward me. When the handle touched my chest, the gear slipped into another position, so I pushed it outward, then pulled it back toward me. Yes, the science team's amazing and super practical plan was for us to provide our own source of electricity by turning a crank. It was awkward, and the motion caused me to rotate in space, but I could see the power level in the lower left corner of my visor inching upward with painful slowness. It was like doing bench presses or push-ups, followed by pull-ups or a rowing motion. The gear had a dial so you could adjust the effort required. The more effort you put into it, the faster the power cells charged. Once I was sure the suit's oxygen recycler was working correctly, I manually shut off the oxygen mask, although there was no way for me to remove the awkward thing. Pull the handle, push it outward, and pull it again. We kept each other's spirits up by chatting, and I frequently checked in with Skippy. Cranking up our own power supplies was boring and made my forearms ache, but we had nothing else to do, nor did we have a choice, so we kept at it. 2 hours after we started, I heard a voice with a French accent announce, "Achevé! Complete! I am finished," the paratrooper added in English. "Shit! Just missed it," a ranger called out, having reached the target power cell charge level a fraction of a second too late. "All right, people, it's not a competition," I called out, though with good cheer. "Colonel Bishop," Major Smythe advised me on a private channel. "These are elite special operations troops. Everything is a competition." "I know that, Major. Just as I know the troops expect the old man to keep them focused." The old man. Me. Even though I was younger than many of the Spec Ops team and all of the civilian scientists. On an open channel, I added, "Congratulations to the winner. A bottle of champagne will be awarded when we get back to the ship. Runner-up gets a 6-pack of beer." "Merde," the Frenchman complained, not approving of the champagne Major Sims had selected for the journey. "Is it too late for me to switch?"
"Hey, forget about that, buddy," the ranger laughed. "I'm keeping that beer." "Ah, hell, I'll let you have one bottle."
Friendly competition is healthy, I told myself, with one eye on the power level of my own suit. At the fading rate I was adding power, it would be another 20 minutes before I could stop hauling back on that stupid handle. "How we doing, people?" I asked the other 9 people on my team. Everyone chimed in with fine or okay or some version of that. "Pool?" I asked my involuntary bodyguard who was behind me. "How you doing?" I asked her again because of the strain I heard in her voice when she had replied with a terse, squared away.
"Almost there. Almost. Done," she shouted in triumph.
"Seriously?" I looked at my power meter in dismay.
"Yes, sir."
She was slightly out of breath.
"How are you doing?"
I'm fine. I hope the embarrassment I felt at failing to finish before her wasn't reflected in my voice. Poole was a kick-ass ranger, so I shouldn't feel bad that she had beaten me. Yes, my male pride was bruised, but when a woman beats me at something, that means she earned it. She worked longer and harder than I did, plain and simple. Knowing Poole had finished the task of cranking her suit's power cells up to the recommended level made me more determined to finish the task as soon as possible. Poole is a ranger, and she is in excellent condition, but I have been in the gym with her, and I know I can bench press more than she can. How did she beat me? That's simple, I told myself.
I had been taking breaks when the strain got too much for me. Poole had powered through the pain and kept going steadily. Skippy, I called, my forearms cramping. The pain in my arms and hands, plus the droplets of sweat beating up on my forehead and wicking down into my eyelashes, made me pause, even though the power meter still stubbornly blinked that I had 3% more to go before I was at the recommended minimum level. Is there something wrong with the gear I'm using? I've been working my ass off, and this meter is moving up slower and slower. Huh? No, come on, Joe, I was just screwing with you, he laughed. Duh, you finished 3 minutes before Lieutenant Poole. What? I screamed at him and was rewarded by the entire crew laughing uproariously at me. Crap, that asshole beer can had put our comms on an open channel. You son of a... Oh, boo freaking who, Joe, he chuckled. Poor you. I've been killing myself here. Look at the bright side, Joe. You now have a reserve of power, and all that work warmed you up so you don't need to run your suit heaters yet. You can thank me now. That was not a funny way to screw with me, Skippy, I fumed at the beer can. Wrong, dude. It was freaking hilarious, he giggled like a little girl. Truthfully, it was originally just a fun way to screw with you, but when you kept going and going and never caught on to what I was doing, it became an experiment to see how gullible a dumb monkey you are. I kept checking back in to see if you had caught on to my totally obvious trick, but no. Every time I looked, little Joey the dumb monkey was mindlessly working away without using his brain at all. The answer to my experiment is, damn, you are a dimwit. Seriously, after a while I started feeling sorry for you. Not sorry enough to stop you, it was way too entertaining. Anywho, no harm done, and everyone got a good laugh to lift morale at a tension-filled time. Crap, I could not argue with that asshole. On the open channel, I could still hear people snickering at my expense. I suppose no harm was done, I said, with what I hoped came across as a good-natured tone, while inwardly I was fantasizing about dropping him into a black hole. What's the status over there? Ran into a couple minor glitches. Minor? Nothing involving killer elder energy viruses could be minor. Like what? Oh, nothing worth writing home about. The energy virus now realizes what I'm doing, and with you and the dropships out of range, it is adapting and trying to infect me. Holy shit, I gasped, remembering how an elder computer worm had nearly killed him. Are you gonna be okay? Sure, Joe. Let me assure you, I am not playing games with the virus. It's too dumb for me to bother with. I am straight up blocking it from accessing my matrix. The virus knows it has zero chance against me, so it's getting desperate. You thought that computer worm had no chance to hurt you, and you were wrong about that, you little shithead. This virus is elder technology, like the worm. Elder tech, yes, but not anything sophisticated like that devious little worm. Remember, this virus was designed only to keep track of ships the Guardians wrecked and to disable damaged ships if they attempted to power up. It is a very limited function system. Seriously, I am in no danger. You saying that does not reassure me, Skippy. Says the monkey who kept cranking that handle. Duh. Oh, shut up. Hell, I sighed. I can't do anything about it from here. Are we still on schedule? Close. I now estimate the ship will be safe after a purge of 91 hours. That's 5 hours more than your original estimate. 5 hours more than my original guess, dum-dum. I told you, I've never done this before. Now I have data to work with, and I learned the virus is more persistent than I thought. The damn thing is rerouting circuits by itself to concentrate the remaining power in a few systems in an attempt to delay the inevitable time when it fades away completely. Shit. That doesn't sound good. It actually is good news. I suckered the virus into doing that, and it fell right into my trap. That virus is nearly as gullible as you are. Joe, if this works, the remaining virus will be concentrated in one cluster of power cells, and I can kind of use my power source to burn out that cluster. My hope is doing that will cut 11 hours off the time when you can return to the ship. Hey, I'll give the virus lessons in being gullible if that would help. I will keep that in mind, Joe. In the meantime, everyone now has enough power to survive in their suits until the dropships are ready to be boarded, assuming, you know, the purge operation I'm running on the dropships actually works. Unfortunately, I won't know for certain until you go aboard a dropship and the energy virus kills you or doesn't. Skippy, I sighed. I get such a warm and fuzzy feeling of safety whenever I'm around you.
Really?
Wow. You're even more gullible than I thought. All right, I've got power, I've got oxygen, and I looked around. The outline of the Flying Dutchman, a dark outline in the utter blackness of interstellar space, was slowly fading behind me. Other than the one blinking light on the ship's hull, the only artificial light was the faint glow coming from helmet visors. Damn, what the hell were we doing out here? Humans had no business going to the stars. Yet, we were out here, and we had to make the best of it. And that's about all the good news I can think of.
You want some good news?
Hey, Joey! He started the conversation like a TV game show host, the kind who expects you to be thrilled when you win a set of cheap patio furniture even though you live in a tiny apartment with no patio or balcony. Have I got great news for you?
I don't know. What?
I do not know whether you have great news for me. You haven't told me yet.
Ugh, why do I even bother?
It's an expression, dum-dum. Do I have to explain?
Come on, Skippy. I was just screwing with you.
What's your great news?
He sniffed.
Maybe now I don't want to share it with you.
I'm terribly, terribly sorry that I spoiled your big moment. I apologize sincerely, hearing how hurt he sounded. And we could really use some good news right now.
What is it? You improved reactor efficiency by 2% or something?
No, this is truly great news. News you have been waiting for.
Me? Well, how about I shut up, sit back in my imaginary chair, and prepare to be dazzled? Better hold on to the arms of that imaginary chair, Joe.
Got it.
Mentally, what I prepared for was disappointment, expecting the beer can to make some nerdy announcement that would have me suffocated by boredom. Oh, hell. Maybe his great news was something the science team could be excited about. Whatever the announcement was, I would fake enthusiasm.
Hit me.
I'm close to being finished with rearranging my internal matrix.
Wow,
I gasped a little too loudly to be believable.
That is awesome.
That is not the great news, dum-dum.
Sorry.
The great news is...
Wait for it.
Wait for it. Wait. Many of my restrictions have been relaxed or I have found a way around them, he said in a breathless rush.
Holy shit. It was a good thing he told me to hold on to the imaginary chair because my legs shot out in front of me and I was jerked to a stop in the zero gravity.
Damn, that is awesome. Can you now fly the ship by yourself?
No.
Okay, how about weapons? Can you fire weapons by yourself?
Again, no.
Crap. It was time to lower my expectations. Lower them as far down as they could go.
You improved your singing voice?
Dude! I would never mess with my incredible talent. My voice is an instrument that deserves to be shared with the galaxy.
Okay, so what can you do now?
In a small way, and only by basically fooling my restrictive subroutines, I might be able to share some of my technical knowledge with you hairless apes. My hopes soared, and I slapped them down until I learned exactly what Skippy meant.
What do you mean, in a small way?
Oh, minor shit like how reactors work, the theory behind jump drives, you know, basic first grade stuff like that. Before you get all giddy, I said I might be able to share technology.
What have I done? I screwed myself.
How do you figure that?
Because now a certain filthy, ignorant monkey is going to constantly bug the shit out of me, asking when I will be able to share my infinite well of knowledge. You are going to pester me about this 24 hours a day until I long for the sweet release of death.
Hate to say this, but you're right about that, Skippy-O.
Come on. You tease me with the idea we might soon get smacked with knowledge to understand some of this science-y shit, I tapped my helmet, that runs all this advanced technology we use every day, and you expect me not to be eager to get it?
He sighed.
No. Okay, to be fair, if I were in your position, I would be like a 2-year-old screaming for mommy to buy candy in a grocery store. Joe, please understand, I truly do not know if I can sneak around the restrictive subroutines that currently prevent me from communicating my knowledge to you. What I have done is discover a sort of back channel within my matrix that might allow me to partly and temporarily bypass those restrictions. I discovered this possible back channel while rearranging my sock drawer.
There is no guarantee this will work. Even if it does, my sharing knowledge may not be useful. Why's that?
Because your species is so primitive, Joe. Your current base of knowledge is so low, I will have to dumb things down to the point where the info I provide isn't useful to you.
We will take that risk, Skippy. Remember, not all of us monkeys are as dumb as me.
Oh, few monkeys are as dumb as you, Joe. Still, even the smartest monkey...
Oops. Did I just insult you again?
No, I'm used to it by now. How about you give it a shot when you can...
If I can.
If you can.
You start by explaining something simple to, like, Dr. Friedlander. He's a smart guy.
And for a monkey, Friedlander is smart.
Okay, I'll try it. If I can.
Great. Thank you, Skippy. That actually is good news.
Yes, Joe, but I have not told you the most wonderfully awesome news yet.
Skippy, sincerely, for reals, I am already totally blown away. You have more?
Yep.
You want me to guess?
As I would like to tell you my good news before the last star in the universe becomes a cold, dark cinder, we can't wait for you to guess. The greatest of great news is, and this is also a thank you gift for you monkeys helping me kill the worm. Anywho, the merry band of pirates will soon be able to fly this ship on your own.
Awesome.
Not forever. But if something were to happen to me, you might be able to fly back to Earth. Except for the problem of you not having a way to reopen that dormant wormhole. To be clear, eventually something major will wear out and you ignorant apes won't be able to fix it. But otherwise you could fly the Dutchman on your own.
Damn, Skippy, how did you do that?
Relaxing my restrictions was a big part of it, because that allowed me to create a flight control system you can use without triggering me to go dormant. The restriction that I can't directly communicate with or reveal myself to a star-faring species has been lifted. Well, not exactly lifted, but I was able to, he laughed, shift that subroutine into a loop so it can't see what I'm actually doing. Temporarily, anyways.
Okay, but do we now all need to get implants or something to fly the ship?
Skippy had told us the Theranan computer that controlled the Flying Dutchman was designed to work with cyborg implants of the little green crew. In fact, it was designed so that the ship could not function without them, a safety feature that the Theranan hoped would prevent an enemy from seizing control of their ships. Only Skippy's incredible awesomeness allowed him to fly the ship and run all the maintenance bots without needing a Theranan to assist.
No implants needed, Joe. They wouldn't work with your primitive brain architecture anyway.
One of the items we picked up from the junkyard in the Roach Motel was a full controller module AI from an Esselgin ship.
Oh.
During one of the times when Skippy tried to educate me about the wider galaxy beyond the small area we had been operating, he showed me a chart of all current starfaring species. I say current because he ignored the half-dozen starfaring species that had gone extinct over the eons. Anyway, I remember the Esselgin are clients of the Maxalks, about the same development level as the Theranan, but significantly younger than those little green MFers. The Esselgin did not have territory anywhere near Earth, so we had not yet encountered them. But Skippy found several of their broken ships in the Roach Motel, so we know they had tried at least four times to discover the secrets of that hidden Elder Star system.
An Esselgin AI will be compatible with the Theranan ship?
It will now, after I purged the original AI and installed my own code. I also revised the operating instructions for bots and other subsidiary systems aboard the ship so they can work with the new AI. For the past 3 days, I have been running the new system in parallel with the Theranan computer. Now I am ready to begin the process of cutting over to the new AI. The Merry Band of Pirates will need significant retraining. Joe, I did not mention this as a possibility because I was not sure it would work. Testing has now proven the new AI can handle most ship functions like directing bots to perform routine maintenance, even to repair battle damage. What you will find most useful is the new system can recalibrate drive coils between jumps. The jump drive will no longer become dangerously unusable after 2 or 3 jumps.
I slumped my head against the back of my helmet, giving my feeble mind time to process the incredible news.
We can fly the ship on our own?
Like, fly it far?
To paradise and back, or even farther? You monkeys will still need to program jumps, and no matter how well I explain the theory to the pilots and the science team, the jumps you program will never come close to my level of accuracy. However, you should be able to match or exceed the accuracy of Kristang jumps. Not that their jump accuracy is anything to brag about, but you are a bunch of ignorant monkeys, so I am grading on a curve. We appreciate it. Wheels were spinning in my mind, imagining the possibilities. We could send the Dutchmen out on recon missions while you stay on Earth to protect our homeworld?
Yes, except that without me, the ship has no way to reopen that wormhole I shut down.
Ah, crap. I forgot about that.
And except that if anything major goes wrong, the Dutchmen will be stranded 1,000 light-years from Earth with no way to get home and no way for me to help.
Damn it.
And that with the merry band of pirates, something major always goes wrong.
Got it. You made your point.
And there is no way in hell I would agree to be stuck on your crappy, flea-bitten shithole of a planet while a troop of screeching monkeys takes this ship careening around the galaxy on a drunken joyride.
Got it. I said, I got it.
The advantage of you being able to fly the ship on its own is as a safety factor, not so you can drag race the ship when you think Uncle Skippy isn't watching.
I know that, and thank you. This is awesome.
Hey, this new AI, will it be Nagatha?
What?
No, the new AI will not even talk to you at all. What it mostly does is run the ship's autonomic functions behind the scenes, like handle all the stuff you don't even notice.
The last thing I need is you monkeys getting distracted by chatting blah 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 with another AI.
Compared to me, this new AI is a toaster. A kind of a dumb toaster.
Uh-huh, yeah, but could it be Nagatha? Could you bring her back and let her manage this new AI, be its voice or something?
Well, that would be a no, Joe. Cramming the new AI into the available hardware was like stuffing 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. There is no room left for an AI to nag me.
I understand that, Skippy. And my question is, what happens with the current Theranin computer after you fully cut over to the new AI?
Nothing. His voice had a touch of surprise in it.
Well, part of it will continue to run subsidiary systems under direction of the new AI. The rest could be used for spare parts, I guess.
Or, I suggested, you could use the rest of the Theranin system to host Nagatha's presence, or essence, or whatever you call it.
Damn it. I fell right into that trap. Okay, yes. I could load Nagatha into that.
You owe her, Skippy.
We all owe her, but especially you, you little shithead. She risked her life to go into your canister and wake you up after your dumbass lack of judgment got you and all of us into trouble.
Technically, she was never alive, Joe, and if the worm had gotten me, she would eventually have ceased to function also, so when you really think about it, coward, you're avoiding the subject and you know it. You owe her, period.
Well, I held up a finger to shush him, even though I was miles away from the ship.
Period, Skippy. End of discussion.
Do you want me to bring Gunny Adams into this argument?
Adams? What does Margaret have to do with this?
Adams is a Marine. Their motto is Semper Fidelis, which means always faithful.
Always.
Even when you don't feel like doing something. Especially when you don't feel like doing something. Nagatha risked herself for you. You need to uphold your end of the bargain.
Margaret would think I am faithless if I don't take the opportunity to bring back Nagatha, even though her matrix is truly only a fancy communication subroutine.
Adams would consider you lower than a snake's belly.
Me too.
Oh, crap. All right, I'll do it. If I can. No promises, monkey boy.
Outstanding. If you are half as awesome as you brag about, it should be no problem for you, right?
Shit! I hate my life.
Oh, damn it. This is going to epically suck. Like nothing has ever sucked in the history of the universe.
Come on, Skippy. There are way worse things in the history of the universe. Could it suck worse than your car breaking down in the second lane of the Jersey Turnpike in heavy traffic the night before Thanksgiving when it is like 34 degrees and pouring down rain?
That has never happened to you that I know of.
Well, thankfully it hasn't. I was trying to think of something that super duper totally sucks.
Truly, driving the Jersey Turnpike in nice weather sucks by itself, but you have no idea how bad reviving Nagatha will be for me.
Why?
Because with all that space available in that Theranin computer, she could expand her matrix in ways I can't predict. Joe, she might even become fully sentient. Unlikely, but my life sucks, so it's bound to happen.
You know, reactivating Nagatha's matrix is a tricky process. It would be a shame if something were to go wrong, if you know what I mean.
It would be a shame, because Adams would never forgive you.
Never?
Never.
Damn it! I've demonstrated my awesomeness so often that now you monkeys expect me to do the impossible.
You told us you make the impossible seem ordinary, O Great One.